Folks, welcome back to another episode of Wilco the Podcast. This is Matt Morgan, and I'm joined, as always, with Lance Hill. Lance, how you doing, man?
Oh, I'm great because of this episode. how you doing, Mark?
I'm feeling good, man. This was a highlight episode for sure. We got another guest episode coming at you today with Wilco's stage manager, Ashwin Dipankar. This is a highlight episode, Lance.
It is. And you and I talked on the phone the day after we interviewed Ashwin. And I think I stopped us and said, wait, we should actually wait to have this debrief until we start the episode. We shouldn't make it long, obviously, because we've got some stuff to get to.
Too late for that. Too late for that.
But we were reflecting on like how cool it was to hear some of these behind the scenes stories that Ashwin had. These are those intimate moments that happen between the band and the crew. And so we just feel so lucky to have been able to hear some of these stories.
Absolutely. And, you know, as funny as we were wrapping up with Ashwin, we said, hey, you know, if you could shoot us over a bio, just so we get all your credentials right. And his wife, Shara, actually overheard us asking him. So she whipped up this bio. I'm going to read it because we need to cover all of our bases so y'all know who Ashwin is. And some of you may have seen him out on tour with Wilco because he is Wilco's stage manager. He's up there before the band comes on, running back and forth, making sure everything's in order. But here's the bio courtesy of Shara. Shout out to Shara. Ashwin Dipankar is a backline technician and stage manager for Wilco Touring World. When he is not on the road, he is the loft session assistant. And outside of working with Wilco, he is a drummer and recording engineer who has been in the Chicago music scene for well over a decade. Currently, he is working on a music project with his wife, Shara, called Atma. We talk about that later on in the episode. And Atma is planning to release their debut album later this year, so be on the lookout for that. Ashwin currently resides in Chicago with Shara. And Lance, one last thing before we jump into it. I really have to give a huge shout out to Melissa Messenbring. Melissa is a friend who initially connected us with Ashwin. So without her introduction, this would not have been possible. So big thanks to Melissa. Lance, let's get into it. Here is our conversation with Ashwin Dipankar. Ashwin, we're so happy to have you here on Wilco the Podcast. It's been a long time coming.
Long time.
We've been in conversation for just shy of a year, I think.
I'm glad it's finally happened, and I'm happy to be here. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you so much.
Well, you had a very busy 2023, because Wilco had a very busy 2023.
Absolutely.
We'll get into that in a little bit here, but we wanted to rewind a little bit and start at the beginning. We're always curious how folks like yourself got involved with the Will Crew. So take us back to the beginning. What led you to working for and touring with Wilco?
I've been wanting to play drums ever since I can remember. I remember begging my parents for a drum kit at a really young age. And my Indian parents were just like, absolutely not. No noise in the house. No way. And so they threw me on piano for a long time. And it just didn't take. And then I finally made a deal with them. We'll do 10 lessons on Saturday morning, 9 a.m. If you can do 10 lessons, we'll go and buy you a drum set. And they really thought I'd sleep in and not come through on my end, but I was waking them up at 7 a.m. on Saturday. All right, time to wake up. Let's go to the drum lesson. with a local kid in town. And 10 lessons. And then they held up their end of the bargain. We drove to the closest guitar center. And they bought me my first kit.
What was your first kit?
It was a Pearl Export.
Nice.
Big deal at the time.
Yeah.
I'm still friends with the person who sold me the kit, Dan Cirillo. He came to my wedding. He's a big Wilco fan. He comes to Wilco shows, and we get to have that moment of like, this is all because of you. You sold me that drum set.
So, that's so
we
cool.
get to have those full circle moments. I've had a lot of those in my life with Wilco now. Yeah, that's kind of the beginning of that. And then from there, like the trajectory of, you do what you do when you have a drum kit in early years. You start a rock band and you go to local shows and you become a smelly band dude. And that's exactly what I did. I fell in love with going to local shows, having fun, playing music with friends. In high school, there was another drummer in school. His name was Matt Yates. We both found out that we loved drums and both in rock bands. And then we became connected at the hip. We're still best friends till this day. All of my high school time is remembered back as hanging out in my mom's basement and playing drums and then really trying to understand the physics of drums, understanding tonality, understanding the different types of wood, different bearing edges, different weights of hardware and how that affects the tone, how a microphone reacts to a drum and proximity and why certain microphones sound a certain way. And all of those things me and Matt did together, we had no idea that we were building a skill or a trade. None of that ever occurred to us that that's something that we were doing. We were just having fun and learning and discovering. You know, cut to today, I'm working for Wilco doing this, and he's the stage manager, drum tech, and percussion player for Bonnie Raitt.
Whoa.
It's mind-blowing what has happened in that time. We both went to college. We both went to Columbia College, and I double majored in recording engineering and live sound engineering. So I feel like I became a little bit more well-rounded in understanding audio. And then senior year, I got hired to start touring as a drummer in a band. The band was A-Lull, A-L-U-L-L. And again, just a bunch of friends getting in a van with a trailer, throwing a bunch of stuff in it and going around the country. And we did it for years and slowly gained steam that way. You know, it's a very old school way of touring and getting your name out there and just getting experience. Again, building a trade. Didn't realize mm-hmm. that. Just having fun with friends. We got to open up some really great acts, got to do some really cool festivals. As you do when you're young and in your 20s, you put all your eggs in one basket. And of course, the band didn't work out and we broke up. You got to do what you got to do to survive. I went, moved back home with my parents, got a job at the grocery store at a Jewel Osco in town.
Shout out to Jewel Osco.
Tonight's episode sponsored by
you. Yeah. You know, you do what you have to do. You start over. And I was determined to, like, I really enjoyed what it was like to be on tour and being a part of a community, being a part of a production as small as it really registered with me. So my goal was to somehow do that again. But being home ended up being a huge blessing. I met my now wife in Kankakee, and she also had the same feelings and desire to move to Chicago and give it a shot. So we both moved up. We saved enough. We moved up and we both started working at Shuba's in Chicago.
Nice. Yeah.
Legendary rock club. She worked there as a bartender. I worked there and Lincoln Hall as maintenance, security, bar backing, and helped out with audio as well. I was there all the time. I wanted to understand the infrastructure of what it means to work in a rock club and made great, great friends doing it there. One particular friend, Ashley P.K. McGazel, we became great friends, and she started touring from after working at Shuba's because that was her dream to start doing that and being part of a production. And then I went and started working at the Chicago Music Exchange. I started in the shipping department and then became the product buyer for the drum shop. Now it's 2014. Ashley, who was just working her ass off trying to, you know, get on better tours and have more responsibility. She gets in touch with Eric Frankhauser, who was at the time working tour managing Eels for many, many years. And he gets the job of tour manager for Wilco and then brings her along. So, and they started in 2013 on that gig. So now it's 2014. I'm super excited for her. That's amazing. The last thing I want to do is ask for concert tickets. So I don't, you know? So me and Matt, we buy Winterlude tickets for 2014, we buy tickets for the last two shows. There were six shows at the Riv, and we went to the second, the last two. Amazing shows. Incredible shows. The second to last night, we're at the Riv on the balcony, and Matt just snaps a picture and posts it on Instagram. We're here. Me and my best friend are here, going to watch Wilco. Amazing. Because we've gone to so many shows together and so many Wilco shows. Ashley sees the picture. She sees the picture from backstage before the show, comes up to the balcony, says hi, and gives us two passes to stick around after the show.
Wow.
Like, this is a dream.
Wow.
You know, it's an absolute dream. Incredible show. We stick around afterward. We meet Glenn and we talk drums for a bit. This is not the first time we've met.
Oh,
I'll circle back to that because that's actually kind of a fun story that I really want to hit on. But I turn to Ashley and I say, I point to the drum tech, Nate Murphy. I say, when that drum tech quits, you call me. All right.
And yes.
I was joking, but not joking.
Uh-huh.
And that was December of 2014. I did not realize those were the last shows I was going to see as a fan. April, I get the call. Nate has a baby and he needs to get off the road for some time, which is a very normal thing. And Ashley puts me on the short list. She really stuck her neck out for me, like extremely stuck her neck out for me. Because at that time, that was the biggest production I would have been a part of by a lot. And so I was like, there's no way I'm going to get this gig. There's no way. I talk with Eric Frankhauser, the tour manager. That goes super smooth. And then Glenn calls. And what was supposed to be like a 5-minute conversation just to see turns into 45 minutes of us chatting. We just hit it off. It was great. It was easy. I don't know. I don't know what else to say. He's like just the most personable person to be able to talk to. And that was it. I got the gig. I hung up. I didn't know at the time, but then Eric calls me back and he goes, "Hey, so you ready?"
Wow.
And 10 days later, I was on tour. April will be 9 years.
Wow.
Was there any like onboarding process, or was it like, "Hey, we're going on tour, get ready."
So with that, I had my first day at the Loft. So we had 2 days of prep at the Loft, straight into a tour. You know, I kind of feel bad because I couldn't even give Chicago Music Exchange 2 weeks notice.
Mm.
I didn't even have 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But the beautiful thing is that, you know, working in a music instrument retail shop is that everyone understood and everyone's like, sure. You have to do this. You have to
I got to go on tour with Wilco, guys. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So I mean, everyone was super respectful and sweet about it. And I still love all of those guys there. So it's great. First day in the Loft, completely overwhelming, as you can imagine. But we had 2 days for me to, and all the other new guys. It was me and two other guys that started that day. Two other backline guys. And we're all just looking at everything, making sure that everything's working, getting the lay of the land with Nate, who's guiding me through everything. So it was really helpful. Then we go upstairs to like look on the third floor, and that's where the studio is. And that's what you've seen pictures of and everything like that. And to grab a couple things, and the whole band is there rehearsing. And the first song I'm hearing them rehearse is Panthers.
Oh,
oh wow. And I'm
just like, this is unreal right now. Unreal. Cause that was every tour they pull out some deep cuts. And for that tour, for this first tour that I'm doing, Panthers was one of those. And they really haven't done that since.
Yeah, I was going to say, they don't play incredible. That very often.
Mm-mm. And that's where I met Jeff and the rest of the guys. It's just an unbelievable experience.
You're saying you met Jeff Tweedy for the first time, your first day of work?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Isn't that
wow?
Isn't that like crazy pressure?
That's not intimidating at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is that like, you know, as you're a fan of the band and now suddenly you're an employee of the band? How do you kind of juggle that fandom and professionalism? You know, I'm sure 9 years in, you've got it down. But on that first day, what was that like?
I tried my hardest to seem chill. You know, no stories about how many times I've seen them, how much their music means to me, how much Jeff means to me. None, no gushing. I'm really trying to just play it cool.
Yeah.
You know, Glenn saying things like, oh, you know, I play the song called I'm Trying to Break Your Heart and it goes like this and I use this and I'm like, Little does he know, I know exactly what you're playing. I know exactly what I need to do.
I might have heard of that song before. Yeah.
It's just really humble that these guys are just like, not, they don't expect anything from anybody. They want to be nurturing. So if I could back up, the first time I did meet Glenn, me and Matt would go to drum tutorials and we would go to master classes. And we went to one where Glenn was the artist and it was a class on his composing and his approach on performance. And it was a really great class. It was extremely educational. It's exactly what you think it was. It was extremely nerdy. And it's a group of 20 drummers taking notes and really trying to dissect the kit. And his solo kits are incredible and full of texture and tones. And he's doing so many different pieces and he's looping and he has got contact mics on a lot of things and he's running distortion pedals on a lot of stuff. He's it is a whole ensemble from one person. So it was really cool to see that live. But during that class, I brought him something that I've created because I've seen him perform those pieces before. And there's something that he uses on underneath his hi-hat stand. He puts a brick wrapped in a towel underneath the pedal. So he gets that downbeat when he's not using the hi-hats, but he still wants percussion on the hi-hat cymbal. And I created a rubber gasket piece that can go between the hi-hat clutch and the hi-hat percussion. So he doesn't need to use a brick. He can still get that downbeat. So I gave him one and I was like, hey, this is what I'm using to do this. I think you would benefit from this. He's like, oh my God, this is amazing. Thank you so much.
Oh, that's cool.
And this was like, this might have been 2008 or 2009. So fast forward back. I'm at the loft. It's day one at the loft. And we're going through the kit together. Glenn's there as well. It's just explaining to me his setup. And he's a really tall guy and I'm not. So it's like, I really got to take notes about how tall and how low all the drums are. Because it's not very conventional. And then he reaches in his pocket and he pulls out the gasket that I made for him. And he goes, someone gave this to me. It's really important to me that we bring this along on tour. Please don't lose it. And I went, yeah, man, that was me. I gave that to you. And his eyes get so wide. And he goes, oh, my God, that was you. And it
just clicked.
I feel like a lot of things clicked in that moment. And it kind of the rest of the day and the next day went really smooth to where I don't really remember too much. No friction. And that's how that went.
that's an amazing story. That is an amazing. To think about like him saying like, this is a really important relic to me that you gave him. Like, wow. That sounds like confirmation. Like you're the man for the job.
They felt chose. That way.
Yeah.
It definitely felt that way that our minds are alike. That's been sealed over time and time again. The more things that we have created together, we've created a lot of percussion together. And, you know, depending on the record that they've put out, we've come up with different, we call them Glennventions that he's come up with. And I've like made them robust to be able to tour and take a beating and things like that and be able to repair and, yeah, man, it's been really cool. And we've also had a lot of really great drum percussion companies help us create and emulate things that they've done in the studio as well. Index Percussion, Swan Percussion, Keplinger Percussion, Roots EQ, Snare Weight, all of these companies are just really great on top of his endorsements, which, you know, Zildjian cymbals and Evans Drumheads and Promark Drumsticks and Sonar Drums, of course. Like everyone has been really great to him and they want to just see him succeed and be able to do what he does.
It's funny, Ashwin, because anybody that's seen Wilco or Jeff Tweedy within the last few years, they've probably seen you. And I had the chance to see Jeff Tweedy this past summer.
This was Jeff's acoustic run.
That's right.
Last year. Yeah. I was there. I wear a lot of hats and I was Jeff's guitar tech for that run. So we did two solo tours straight into two Wilco tours last year. And so Jeff was gone from June to Halloween, where we ended at the Metro. We were gone a lot. Yeah, that's a lot of touring.
No kidding.
Towards the end of it, he started saying to the crowd that this is the hardest Wilco has toured since AM.
Oh, wow.
So, okay. Yeah, that's a lot smushed together.
Yeah. Yeah, tell us a little bit about, like, you personally. What are the best parts of touring? And then on the other side, what are the challenging parts of touring?
The hardest part of touring is being away from family and friends. It's really tough. It can be really tough. It's harder for some than others. And it's usually when someone's got some kiddos at home, it can be really tough. And we have a lot of band and crew that have either small ones or teenagers, but that's definitely the hardest part. Another hard part about touring is when you get home, people, your friends and family don't necessarily realize that you're home or know that you're home. So it's kind of on you to text them and be like, hey, I'm back. Let's hang out. Let's do things. And I'm really bad at that. So people just assume that I'm gone indefinitely. And
all the time, yeah.
That is something that I never realized was a thing.
Yeah.
So that can be really tough. That's probably the most emotional baggage that comes with touring. Mm-hmm. More of the physical stuff is like weather, man. Oh my God. Like when you got an outdoor show or a festival, rain and wind can just ruin your day. One story is that in 2021, we did a co-headlining tour with Sleater-Kinney, and we came through Kansas City, and we were doing all outdoor shows, and it rained on us 13 days in a row.
Ooh.
13 days in a row, and they're all outdoor shows, and you know we're trying to be COVID compliant, so we're all wearing masks at the time, and it's so hot in the summer. And it was really, really tough. It was the hardest tour I think I've ever done. And this show specifically in Kansas City, it was over 100 degrees outdoors, the sun beating down on us. It was really, really tough. Oh, and the stage was too small, way too much gear on stage. It was kind of a nightmare scenario. And then comes the sideways rain right into your stuff. And it was just brutal, brutal, brutal day. To where our opening band was Namdi. They're amazing band. If you haven't heard of them, check them out.
I think they were at Solid Sound 2022,
that's right?
Right?
Yeah. That's right. And Namdi is from Chicago, so it's like just really great vibes all the way around. And they weren't even sure if they're going to have time to play because of the rain, but I believe they did their full set. Sleater-Kinney, I think they did a good amount. But then right after that, just lightning, and we had to shut down.
Oh,
had
no.
to evacuate for safety, and it was over. I've never built a whole stage and then had to pack it up without a show happening. It's the most disheartening thing. It's the most disheartening thing I've ever had to do on tour. And it's like everyone's heads down. It just sucks. Mm. That sucked. But we came back last year and played a great show. And everyone, like, you know, people were shouting out at the band, like, welcome back. We're so happy they're here. And it was just, awesome. A really, really cool moment for everyone to finally get their Wilco fix. You know, other logistic things of tour can really be a drag sometimes, like, just getting in and out of a building, bad electricity, too narrow of streets for your semi truck to get close to the venue. Or I have this story of Rome. This is like my nightmare story that I tell everyone. It's the semi truck can only get 2 miles away from the venue. That's as close as it could get in Rome. It's Rome, you know, like the Colosseum is up the street. All they have, their infrastructure in Italy for that at this particular venue was one Toyota truck. It would drive up the cobblestone, pick up one road case, drive all the way down. 4.5 hours.
Wow.
So I hope our listeners are appreciating what goes into a Wilco show when you show up. These are all things that we don't think about.
There's a lot of infrastructure that goes into that. So yeah, that one's the nightmare story I tell people about, where it's four and a half hours in and about the same going out. But usually when you run into those obstacles, the shows are just even better.
Yeah.
I don't know what that science is and what that math is, but it's as hard as it is to get into the building and to put on the show. The fans are just so ready to be there. Yeah. They're so excited, and the band feels that 100%. And they just get it.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So like it keeps you on your toes, and it reminds you why you're doing it.
So those are some challenging stories. What are some like tour highlight stories that you'd be willing to share with us? Any concert moments that stand out in your mind?
Tour highlights, man. I got plenty. I got to mention kind of bringing it back to my first show with Wilco. So now it's my third day on the tour. We're in Dallas, Texas. It's the first show, and I'm so nervous. I'm 27 years old. I'm the youngest guy on stage for the crew by a lot. And, you know, I'm the young guy. I'm just the young guy, and I'm double checking everything, triple checking, quadruple checking. I still feel like I'm forgetting something, you know, all of those nervousness things that are happening. And at that time, Glenn still had a gong behind the kit, really big gong. So yeah. My station was hiding behind that. So I'm right behind the kit. So if anything happens, I'm very close, you know? And so the lights go down, crowd goes wild, band walks onto stage, and Glenn walks up to me and goes, "Hey man, I'm not feeling that well. Do you mind playing the first song?"
That's amazing.
And I go, I'm just so nervous. He's 100% kidding, but it's happening so fast and I'm so overwhelmed that I freeze. I'm like, and he's like, "Nah, you know what? I think I got this." And he just jumps on the kit, clicks off the song, and just rip Company in My Back. Mm. First song of the tour, first show of the tour. And it's one of my favorite live songs from Wilco. It's one of two. Art of Olmos is the other, like just rocker. And it's just like, and I just like, I'm like, my chin was probably on the ground. I'm just like, what is my life? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What is
out of body experience? I'm sure.
What is happening right now? And the show goes off without a hitch. It's so smooth. Crowd's great. Jeff's happy. Glenn's ecstatic. He's joking with me the whole time. It's just so low stress for those dudes. I was the most stressed by far, you know, like this is just, they're so comfortable.
Yeah.
That it's so easy, and it's great. So that's just a really funny memory that I have.
That's a great one.
Are there any more tour stories that you want to share with us that,
I do have one specific one. And it's like one of those full circle moments. Like I remember my first moment of discovering Wilco. So this was me and Matt sitting on the couch at his place, and we turn on PBS and Austin City Limits is on the taping, and Wilco did a Sky Blue Sky taping in 2007. And we just stumbled across it and we're like, who are these guys? And like hooked immediately. I'll never forget Glenn counting off right into Too Far Apart. And I'm like, what is this? And like till this day, that's still one of my favorite songs to see. It's so good. It's a treat. Yeah. Jeff doesn't play it too often, so it's such a treat when it happens.
Yeah.
So that was 2007, 2008. Cut to 14 years later, Wilco's getting inducted into the ACL Hall of Fame, and I'm the stage manager, and we've set this all up, and now they're taping, and they're giving speeches, and they're showing video of that time. And I'm just like, the first thing I do is I grab my phone and I call Matt.
Yeah.
And I go, dude, what is this? He's like, this is life is a trip. Life. Yeah. That's all we kept saying is life is a trip. 14 years later, I'm in charge of this production. And we watched ACL from our TV. It's just wild, man.
Shout out to Matt. I hope Matt gets to hear this episode.
In preparation of doing this podcast, I realized I have this job because of Matt, because he took that picture on the balcony of the Riv and actually saw that picture and then came up and gave us photo. So I have this job because of Matt, you know, it's crazy. Life is just
wild.
I'm pretty sure he turned the TV on to PBS too. So that's on him as well.
Serendipitous.
It's crazy. Life is crazy. But I have two more great memories.
Please.
If we have the time.
Absolutely.
We got the time.
Okay. So along with my first year touring, Wilco announces Star Wars. And they're doing that record cycle now. And now it's towards the end of that year in 2015. And in that show, Glenn has a drum solo. And it's at the end of a song called Where Do I Begin?
Oh, that, yeah.
In the recording, it's reverse drums that sound really cool. Yeah. And they like go along and they have the downbeat that you could still kind of follow in the recording. But live, it's a drum solo. And he is going for it, man.
I need to hear this right now.
It's so much fun. It's so much fun. And I'm still sitting behind him and behind the gong. So I'm really, really close. And after that song, it goes straight into Cold Slope. And about a measure into Cold Slope, into the beat, he slowly will look behind himself and look at me. And with his eyes, he'll ask, how was that drum solo? And to mess with him, 90% of the time, I'd give him a thumbs down. So then he'd curse at me with his eyes and then smile, turn back, and keep playing. But 90% of the time, I do that. But the nights that he really went for it and just crushed it, I'd give him a thumb sideways.
Sideways. You got to keep him working for it. You got to work for that thumbs up.
Yeah, that's how I felt too. I didn't want to just give him a thumbs up every time. Like, come on.
Yeah.
I think in the whole cycle of doing that tour, I think I only gave him two or maybe three thumbs up when he just absolutely obliterated the solo. But when I did, man, he was so jazzed. He was so jazzed when I gave him the thumbs up.
That.
Oh, yeah. Man. But they were always.
I wish
always,
we could see like the ones that you gave the thumbs up. Like what's made him stand
no,
out.
I'm hidden. You won't be able to find me. There's no footage of that. But they were always great. He was, you know, his independence and his ability to just be loose, but just so strong behind the kit. He's so, so good. The drum solos were always good. I just loved messing with him. And I still love messing with him. We have a big brother, little brother kind of thing.
I love that.
And we're constantly giving each other shit and it's great.
That's awesome. But,
so that's a great memory I have with Glenn, especially year one. And,
it seems like you guys hit it off and
it's been all right.
History. Yeah.
It's been all right. But so my fondest memory of Jeff is more recent. I've never heard my favorite Wilco song live. Okay, that's how I'm going to start. The song is Rising Red Lung.
So rising red lung, glisten under the sun.
It's so good. It's lush sounding. It's beautiful. It's unexpectedly intricate of a song. It's amazing. As a fan, all those years of coming to shows and working for Wilco, I've never heard it live.
You've never heard this makes never me so sad. Because
don't worry, I'll make you happy in a second. So recently-ish, Jeff did a string of solo shows and we did a residency, a four-night residency at Brooklyn Made in New York, in Brooklyn. And no repeats. And these shows are so amazing. They're so captivating. It's a tiny audience. I think it's, I'm going to be wrong, but it feels like 150 people in this room, maybe even less. It's so intimate. You basically don't even need a PA, to be honest. It's just such an incredible show to go see, and it's just Jeff on acoustic guitar. So no repeats, and, you know, he's playing a long show. Every once in a while, he'll go, what should I play? What should I do? And I've been saving this moment for a long time. And I said, I've never heard my favorite Wilco song played live. And I knew that perk his ear up. What's that? Knowing that I'm going to say some super obscure, some deep cut thing. You know, he's waited with bated breath. Like, what is he going to throw at me? And I said, Rising Red Lung. The closest I've heard it played is the Tweety Show, episode 44.
Oh, thank you.
The last 5 minutes of that episode. Go check it out. It's on YouTube. At the very end, he plays it, and it's amazing. So I say it to him, and he just goes... I'm not going to play that. And I knew that was going to be the answer. I'm not going to play that. But then he goes, but I'll play it for you right now.
Oh, wow.
So it's just me, and he plays Rising Red Lung in its entirety to me.
Oh my gosh.
That is I'm getting teary-eyed just thinking about it.
Oh my gosh.
That's a core memory. Yeah, for me,
top 10 moment in life, top 5 moment.
So yeah, I have heard it now. That was so special.
Wow.
It was so special.
It was really great, man. Jeff doesn't disappoint. That song is just incredible. That is not just my favorite Wilco song. I know that's my favorite song, period.
Wow.
That song will play at my funeral. I know that's dark, but yeah, that's the one, dude.
I was going to say, it's obvious you mulled this over and sat with it. And so I want to say thank you for doing that.
Oh,
and,
dude.
And it's just like these types of stories. It's like, it's really cool that like fans... We don't know these moments happening behind the scenes, and for you to share them with us, that's really special.
Yeah, I'm the definition of what it'd be like to work for your favorite band. I'm absolutely holding that flag. This is what it means, man.
That's the episode title right there, working for your favorite band.
Oh,
100%. Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
Boom. Thank you, Morgan.
But yeah, man, I try to keep it from the band as long as I possibly could, but I think I did a good job, but... If you ask them, they're like, we knew from day one. Are you kidding me?
All right. So, Ashwin, you have a session assistance credit on Cousin. I guess my first question is, was this the first Wilco record that you have a credit like that on?
I have credits on, I believe, all the records starting with Star Wars.
Oh, whoa. Awesome.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay.
Yeah. It all varies. Every record is recorded differently, and... what's needed is different, but I'm one of the only crew people that live in Chicago, and I'm the only backline person. So I help. I'm just a set of helping hands to help facilitate whatever needs to be done. It mostly consists of whatever Jeff and the band need for the session. I can get prepped, you know, tuning drums, tuning guitars, getting gear out of deep storage, and just getting the session ready is just easy things for me to do. When I'm home, I'm Mark Greenberg's assistant. I'm also Jeff's manager's assistant, Crystal Myers. And just between that, I'm able to stay really busy.
So you're working for Wilco year round. It's not just on tour.
Yeah. Yeah. And I live down the street from the loft, so I'm never away from work basically. But like, yeah, one of my first memories of working on the records is Star Wars is Jeff playing Cold Slope, the riff. Dun, 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 dun. So like that was the skeleton of the track, and then I got to watch him build the song from that. It was just incredible to see how much it's just a great player in front of a great microphone hitting a preamp, and that is it. There's just no studio magic where it's like things are auto-tuned and things are chopped up and all of that kind of stuff. And that's, for records that are done that way, that's great, but that's not how the Loft works. And the Loft is a really good microphone in front of a drum set or a guitar amp or an acoustic guitar. And that's what you're hearing. And you can tell from the recordings, that's what you're hearing. And that's it. So I get to witness that. And it's really inspiring. It's just really great to see that that's how it's done there. And it makes you just want to go home and write music. And that's literally what I do.
And like, as a big fan, like, it's just wild to think about, like, you know, these songs that we hear over and over, you're there for the genesis of the recording. Like, that's, how do you absorb it though?
Are you in the Loft then, Ashwin, like most days when you're not on tour?
Whenever I'm needed. I don't want to linger. I don't want to be an extra body in the room. I'll get everyone situated, comfortable, make sure that the tune that they're working on, everyone has what they need. And then I'll go to the second floor and work on, you know, endless projects that need to happen, whether it's repairs. That fills a lot of my days, getting repairs done from the last tour. I'm there to help facilitate that kind of stuff. We try our best to keep the live gear separate from the recording gear, but sometimes you need to bring that guitar up. You need to bring those pedals up. You need to bring the cymbals, the percussion. Those things need to come up and be recorded. And it's my job to make diligent notes of the things that come up, so they come back down after the session, so they end up back on the road. And knock on wood, I have a perfect score so far, but you know, we'll see. But there's a lot of moving parts, so it's, you know, any way I can help, I'm there to help. But you know, I'm also there to be a soundboard. Of Glenn wants to know what sounds better, or he trusts me, like with either parts or what tools he's going to use to implement. Ode to Joy was a record that wasn't a full kit. It was a lot of different percussion pieces that were built into a drum part. So we really had to knock our heads together to figure out how to do a lot of those parts live. And from that record and a few others, it's like I'm building percussion that either goes on the hi-hat stand or things that are directly on the drums, or we're uploading samples to the sample pad to emulate exactly what that texture is. And then if you go deeper into the nerdiness that is my life, we had what is called a marching machine, which is a frame with wooden dowels, and he plays that on a concert bass drum, so that oh, wow. You can hear it really clearly in Quiet Amplifier and a few other tunes as well. But that zhush, 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 that sound of a bunch of people stomping their feet, that's Glenn with two hands doing that. And we were able to rig that up with some other friends in town. He's able to do that off of a pedal, off of the kit on a drum. Really crazy stuff that we've done, man.
Yeah.
So being there of the birth of those songs helps me wrap my head around what I can do to help facilitate that on the live setting. Like, there's for some sure, really yeah. great bells in the second song on Ode to Joy before us, where it's the downbeat of these really vintage, delicate bells that we didn't necessarily want to bring on tour because they wouldn't survive. And my last trip to India with my family, I found bells that had very similar tones. And I just, like, you know, I'm always looking for percussion. I'm always looking for these things. And I was able to make them into a circular frame that we were able to put a hi-hat clutch on, and now we got the downbeat for those bells, and they're awesome. Used on that song, and they're used on An Empty Corner,
yeah.
also from that record. It's just like really cool. And just got to be creative, you know. Between these songs in a show, our backline guys, the guitar techs, were all coming out after each song and handing off guitars that are either in different tunings or the right aesthetic for the next song. And I'm just as busy as those guys, swapping cymbals, hand percussion, hi-hat percussion, putting things on the drums, triggering up the sampler, It's a lot of stuff, man.
Is that unusual for a drummer? Because I don't even think to look at that. I think I noticed like, oh, there's two new guitars getting switched out.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of drumming.
In my experience, I've never heard of a drum tech being as busy as me. I've never heard of somebody that's swapping as much after song after song. He keeps that me on my toes. Cool. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I just haven't experienced it in the gigs that I've done and my colleagues' gigs. It hasn't been that consistent song after song. He really does keep me busy. I have a digital note. I call it the Glenn Bible, and it's hundreds of songs, and it's updated in real time on the tour of everything that he plays for every song, and it changes very frequently.
Really?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Nothing is sacred. Nothing stays the same. Nothing is consistently like from year to year. It's not how it goes. So it's really, really important that I keep up to date notes of the hand percussion, the samples, anything else that he needs on the kit for any given song, and then also his monitor cues. It's really important that we nail that, all of those things.
It sounds like y'all have a pretty collaborative relationship. Is that a fair statement?
Oh yeah. We're constantly, anytime on tour, anytime off, he's looking for things, any kind of sounds or in going to shops. And I try my best when it's a day off. It was easier when I was just the drum tech, but it's a lot harder now that I have to split between drum tech and stage manager. So I have to really like, use my time wisely, but I try my best to like also always be thinking about these kinds of things and just being aware, you know.
We really love the Beats Project. Is that what he calls it?
Mm-hmm.
All of these Instagram posts. Oh, those are so cool.
They're amazing. And the compositions, he is very much the definition of a composer. It's incredible. So something that a lot of people don't realize that we do is not only do we build a full stage for Wilco, the backline techs, we call ourselves the Backline Bears. It's very dorky. It's extremely dorky, but I'm sharing that here. The Backline Bears, we also do what we call the prac room backstage. And that's little lunchbox amps and little keyboard. And Glenn has a three-piece kit and a cymbal. And it's very tight and, you know, very modest stuff. But when we're on tour, he's also practicing and writing more and doing more beats like that. And I film a lot of them. So like anytime you see the Beat Project where it's not in his studio and it looks like a weird dressing room, it is. And that's what he's doing. And it's really impressive. And those come with its own limitations. Like it's not as much stuff that he's able to have in his studio. So even so, he's able to be extremely, extremely creative and using his limitations to really stretch the boundaries of what he's able to accomplish with so little.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's wild, man.
I wanted to ask Ushwin specifically about Sunlight Ends, if we could. Sunlight Ends in Pittsburgh are tied probably for my favorite songs on Cousin. But Sunlight Ends struck me the first time I heard it because it didn't sound like any other Wilco song we'd ever heard before.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious, you know, it starts off with that electronic beat. Was that, were you around for the kind of the genesis of that song? And did you, what was your role in maybe bringing those sounds about?
I was not a part of the beginning of that one. That is a drum machine that Jeff played to initially.
Okay.
And it's added some reverb and that delay to it. And then he's playing a hologram pedal with an electric guitar and playing along to that. And that was just such a really cool feeling. Glenn added textures on top of that.
Got it.
And that's what that is. So it's like he's using two brushes in his left hand to get that like slap on the snare drum. Mm. And he's got some chains hanging off of the snare to like get that like high end kind of slap from that. And then from there, there's North drums, which are like concert toms, but like, they're curved also. They're so weird. And so and rototoms are in there. So it's like just a lot of really cool textures in that song. And yeah, he's all over it.
Yeah, and you're saying that without consulting the Glenn Bible right there. You just know that. You didn't know we were going to ask you about that.
Oh man, there's a lot committed to memory, man. There's so much. Like, there's times where he's like, "What do I play in the song?" And I gotta like, you gotta have it ready. You gotta know, man.
Yeah.
Not that it's life or death or that, you know, anything is anything, but it's good to
trust you. Like we said,
man. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Mm. It's the kit itself has come through such a revamp since when I remember walking up to it. Like, he trusts me with cymbal choices. He trusts me with drum heads. So I do all of the ordering for those kinds of things. And our relationship with our vendors is great. But like, if there's something new that I think he should try, like, we go for it. And he trusts me. Amen.
Have you ever played with Glenn before? Like, you're a drummer yourself. Do you guys ever like have fun, just collaborate together?
I mean, always. Like, there's a lot of crew jams that happen before a sound check to help Jared, our front of house engineer, get dialed in before the band comes for their sound check. Okay. If we have the time, if we're blessed with the time to be able to do that, sometimes, you know, all the band guys will come out, and if they're feeling like they want to just play along, like, Nels is always playing guitar. He's always wanting to play guitar. That's the only thing he wants to do in his life. So he'll come out to a crew jam and rip with us. It's so much fun. Mike as well. Pat has occasionally jumped on some keys, and then Glenn will play drums and I'll play bass. It's happened a few times. It's just fun. We're just goofing around. But Glenn has also been just really generous with his time. Me and my wife have a project, and it's all been recorded in this studio, and I was feeling like in the rut on a song where I just wasn't loving any of the drum stuff I was doing, and I threw Glenn the song, and like 2 days later he had a drum beat that was out of this world for me, and he just tracked it on his phone and he's like, "Here you go," and I tracked it here, and it's just amazing. He basically saved the song, and it ended up being the song that ends our record. So I'm really, really thankful for
that. Can we plug the record?
Yeah, where can we hear that?
This will be the first time I've talked about it. The band is called Atma, A-A-T-M-A-A. It's me and my wife primarily, and it started as a COVID project. We just did it for fun because we wanted to be creative during that time, and it turned into a record. And
that's awesome.
It happened very organically. We just never expected it to do anything. And it's been fun. I just got my test pressings back from Smashed Plastic. So we have vinyl. We're going to put out our first single in April. We're thinking probably mid-April. And then the record's going to come out in June.
Cool.
And we're
would love to plug that. Are you guys on Instagram or anything like that?
Not yet. This is such a very new thing for us. It's such a fresh thing for us that we haven't even done the socials thing yet. But it's still just a fun project that we just enjoy doing. And we brought some friends in to help with some instrumentation. Dan Phelps played some lead guitar for me, and he lives in Seattle. And he's just a phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal guitar player. And then I also had some other friends come in and lay some stuff down too. But yeah, awesome. It's just a super low stress, low commitment kind of project. And I do that with some other friends as well. But yeah.
And did you record that in your home?
Yeah.
Recording studio.
This room that you see.
Wow.
Drums and guitar and synthesizer and bass, and my wife did all the vocals in here. So I did all the music and she sang, and then,
that's awesome. It. We'll definitely check that out.
Look forward to hearing that. Yeah.
Thank you. But, Glenn did a drum beat for me and he just completely ripped it. And I was like, "Man, can I pay you for your time? Can I just," and he's like, "Absolutely not." I ended up giving him a really cool percussion gift, but he like I had to force it down his throat for him to take it. You know what I mean? It's like, so he's just really great people. And,
that's awesome.
Seriously.
Yeah, so cool. Is there anything else about, before we move on to kind of wrap this up, anything else about the cousin process, like working with Kate Laban, was that a cool experience having an outside producer come in?
Yeah, of course. That's my only experience with a outside producer coming in for Wilco was Kate Laban, and she was amazing. The band guys had an extra person to bounce ideas off of and be a soundboard for. And that's amazing to have. Jeff was able to take a step back and look at the bigger picture and just focus on the record as a whole, the songs as a whole, and not necessarily have to answer a bunch of questions, which was amazing as well. My biggest part for Cousin was Jeff bought a Wahlberg and Awe drum kit that had concert toms. Concert toms are drums that don't have a bottom head. So they have very clear tones and very, very direct sound and very warm. Think Phil Collins in the air tonight. So like that, those are concert toms. So Jeff gave me the task of putting that kit in the booth and then using muffling to create the drum tones that he was hearing in his head. And that also Glenn and Kate wanted to also use as the tone of the record. Okay. And I'm really proud of what we came up with. And seriously, and that's my very, very small part in helping out with that was it was achieving those drum tones. And it was really, really awesome.
Great record.
It is a unique, great sound. Beautiful record.
They did a great job. Amazing job with that. And a couple other things like cymbal choices and like just even Nels was and I were talking about a very specific guitar that I was purchasing for a friend's birthday, Silas Mischler. And in talking to Nels about that guitar, he also owns one. It's a Burns London guitar, and they're just so crazy looking. And he's like, you know what? I haven't pulled mine out in a while. Pulled it out and ripped a take with it just because like we were just happened to be talking about it. And it's just that's so, so cool.
Just the sentence as a fan to fan, mm-hmm. you saying Nels and I were just talking like, what the hell?
He is one of my favorite human beings. Absolutely. Wilco, even just outside of Wilco, he's such an interesting person. And he's got stories for days and days that'll just keep you locked in. He's just a wonderful, wonderful human being.
I believe it.
All of these dudes come from humble beginnings. They come from gigging and grinding, and that's not lost on them when they come together to be Wilco. It's not lost on any of them that, like, you know, gigs can be a drag, and they're all just very grateful and thankful to be able to do this, man. They're all very thankful. Even at the end of last year, when Jeff was thanking everyone for coming out and telling people that that's the longest they've ever toured. He started doing this thing that he just started thanking the crew.
I saw that.
And acknowledging how hard everyone works. And it's not lost on those dudes, how the long hours and the grind. And he's just like, he's not shy about telling everyone how hard we work. And it's just so, so great, man.
Well deserved.
So that keeps me going, man.
Oh, I believe it. Well, Ashwin, we really appreciate your time. We're gonna wind down here with lightning round, if that's cool.
Yeah.
What would you say is the most underrated Wilco album?
Underrated, probably Ode to Joy, because COVID cut that whole cycle short. It's a bummer because those songs were so awesome live, and it was not just Glenn piecing everything together. Like everyone, all those band guys were like doing these unconventional things to these songs. And it was just really cool to see live. I know Mark touched on that as well in his episode, but it really is true, man, that record didn't get what it deserves.
All right. What's your favorite opening track on a Wilco album?
It's really tough, man. Either way or Art of Almost, but I'm going to say either way because that song translates exactly how the record is live. Whereas Art of Almost is an explosion live versus the recorded version. So I don't know why, but I'm going to say either way is my favorite opening.
That is a solid choice. Okay. Two more questions for you. If you could only recommend one song to someone who's never heard of Wilco, which song would you pick?
It's tough, man. Whether it's a song or it's a record, it depends on the person. because you know that they span so many genres, it really depends on who you're talking to. There's no one right answer. There's no blanket answer for that. There's just not, man. And I've tried in the past to just like blanketly give one record, and I've had the reaction of like, this is cool. And then I get to know that person, and then I gave a different Wilco record, and they're like, oh, I get this now. I understand.
That's so cool.
And that kind of clicked in my head, that it's just not, that's just not how it works.
Yep.
And then everyone is different, and you got to do your work and figuring out what to suggest. So that happened early on for me.
I bet. And referencing Mark last time, he was like, no, I don't want to do that. Like, you gotta like what you like.
Oh, I have no problem pushing Wilco. I have to be a little bit more in tune with who I'm talking to.
Yeah. Totally.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. Lastly, what would your desert island disc be? It doesn't have to be a Wilco album. What's your number one favorite album you can't live without?
This is going to prove how much of a fanboy I am. It's Sky Blue Sky.
Oh, love it.
I'm going to get made fun of so much by the crew now, but he told you not to even pick a Wilco record. But yeah, Sky Blue Sky, because it's my favorite record. It's my favorite Wilco record. And it's definitely up there as my favorite record. It's like, either way, Sky Blue Sky, Side with the Seeds, Hate It Here. Let's Not Get Carried Away, man. Come on. It's a perfect record. It's a perfect record.
Picking a Wilco record, mine is Yankee Hotel Foxtrot. So great, you're in record. Good company here.
That was the first record that was handed to me in 2007 to just like, hey, dive deep into this. And that person who handed it to me, Mike Brown, whew, he was right. Oh, man, was he right. He understood the assignment of who I am as a drummer. My goodness. Just the rhythms, the textures, the unconventional drumming. It's just like it clicked. Absolutely clicked.
Oh, all right. Well, Ashwin, did we cover everything? Is there anything that we didn't ask you that you want to talk about?
I think we did a good job.
Okay, cool. We appreciate you being on here. So glad that we can make the connection, and just so appreciate your time.
Seriously.
Well, you guys make it a very enjoyable experience. Keep doing this. Please keep doing this, because it really is great, and really appreciate
that
it.
That means a ton.
That means a ton. Yeah. Seriously. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We appreciate awesome. It. Well, have a good night, Ashwin, and yeah, we'll be talking to you.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. Thanks.
Thanks so much.
Cheers.
Wilco the Podcast is produced by Lance Hill and Matt Morgan. Editorial and theme music by Matt Morgan. You can find us on Instagram at Wilco the Podcast, or shoot us an email at wilcothepodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.